case of the morning, Walker versus Coleman. Mr. Flaxman.
Good afternoon.
We're still morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. And I've tried to get enough sleep before this argument, so I will try to be on my best behavior.
No, you always are on your best behavior.
Thank you.
Even when you're naughty.
Thank you. There are three issues that are raised in the brief. The first is the denial of statutory costs. The second is the refusal to grant a new trial on damages. And the third is the denial of fees. Unless there are questions, I'd like to limit my argument to the first two points and stand on the brief for the fee question. Rule 54 costs are awarded in this circuit to the prevailing party. This court has identified two exceptions for when costs are not automatic, when there's a sanction of some sort, or when there's indigency, demonstrated indigency. Neither is applicable in this case. The district judge in this case said, I'm not awarding costs because I feel I have to apply the same standard I apply to award fees. And it's that I'm not applying the automatic prevailing party standard. I'm applying the three-prong standard for awarding costs in nominal damage cases. This court, at the request of the City of Chicago, said that was wrong in, I think, Contreras versus City of Chicago, and it's still wrong. The plaintiff prevailed, obtained the judgment, and was entitled to a statutory cost. The plaintiff was also entitled to compensatory damages. After the trial and after plaintiff filed his opening brief, this court decided a case called Guzman versus City of Chicago. In the course of that decision, the court, as I read it, and the city, I think, will tell you they read it differently, endorsed the view of the Second Circuit in a case called Kerman, which says that when you're locked up, you have damages. When you're locked up for, in this case, 12 hours, you're entitled to more than 8.5 cents an hour. You're entitled to something, but it's got to be more than zero or more than a dollar for the total time.
You know, Mr. Flaxman, that Kerman decision strikes me as somewhat of an outlier. To the extent that it says that a victorious plaintiff is entitled to compensatory damages as a matter of law for a false arrest. And my problem would be we would have to describe the district court's failure to give that instruction sua sponte as clear error.
Well, the same, except that in Guzman, the instruction that was given on damages was the same as the instruction given here. There's also instruction in Guzman about medical expenses, but the damage instruction, which I reproduced in the appendix from Guzman and from this case, was the same pattern instruction which talks about you can award damages for false arrest for emotional distress.
Yeah, but in Guzman, what we did was, you know, say that it's prudent to instruct the jury that a loss of liberty by itself is a compensable harm. But we didn't say that it's that the plaintiff's entitled to it as a matter of law. I don't think we did.
Well, the way I read it and the way it's approving citation of Kerman is that you're entitled to more than 8 cents an hour when you're locked up for 12 hours. The only argument that was made in the district court for why Mr. Walker should only get zero for his damages was that, well, he's a convicted felon and he's just in this for the money. I think the city will agree, but that's not a legitimate basis to award somebody 8 cents an hour for being locked up.
Well, there was more than that. There was, you know, all that testimony about how he and his friends were laughing and
They were laughing in a cell about the indignity of what was happening to them. They weren't just having a good old time being in a cell waiting to get out when they'd been arrested for no reason. Allowing a jury verdict to stand with zero damages is really contrary to the theme of the Fourth Amendment as it's evolving, where we're relying on damage actions to enforce the Fourth Amendment. Back in 1970, when that case that we cite was decided, where the court said it's okay to get no damages for false arrest, that was before Bivens. That was before the Supreme Court emphasized the availability of damage actions to enforce the Fourth Amendment. It was the high water mark of the exclusionary rule. In Bivens, the Supreme Court recognized that for somebody like Mr. Walker, who's falsely arrested and then beats his case because there's no evidence, the suppression of evidence is not a remedy for the Fourth Amendment. The only remedy for the Fourth Amendment is to award money damages. And when you're locked up for 12 hours, I would argue that anything less than minimum wage of whatever that is now, $9 an hour, is an unreasonably low verdict that requires a new trial on damages. District judge doesn't have the power to add to the verdict. He or she could say it's $1 rather than zero, but the district judge can't say it should be $10 an hour. And there should be a new trial on damages. The plaintiff convinced the jury that the cops lied. We convinced the jury that the cops didn't see Mr. Walker not wearing seatbelts, that the cop lied when he said that Mr. Walker had obstructed us, that the cop lied when he said that Mr. Walker had a loud radio. To enforce the Fourth Amendment, the jury shouldn't be allowed to say no damages for Mr. Walker, and then the district judge say no cost for Mr. Walker, even though it cost $3,000 to do the case, and then say no fees for Mr. Walker. That trivializes the Fourth Amendment and trivializes the jury's judgment that the officers lied.
Now, the costs are just that. They're not attorney's fees. They're just costs.
I would argue for attorney's fees especially the cost. It cost $3,000 to obtain this vindication of rights, which seems mythical.
Now, there was some discussion with the court below that about punitive damages, and I think you thought, say, well, you can't bring up punitive damages, and the district judge says, well, yes, you could have.
Well, there was a deal made in advance of trial that the defendants would not see costs if they prevailed if the plaintiff would waive punitive damages.
I see.
And the plaintiff agreed to do that. And the district judge criticized the plaintiff for doing that. Sometimes plaintiffs want punitive damages. Other times plaintiffs believe that...
They want any kind they can get sometimes, right? Any kind of damages they can get.
But sometimes you get a jury awarding a lot of money in punitive damages and a small amount in compensatory damages, and then the municipality says, we cannot pay punitive damages. Go get it from the officer.
I see. Okay, so it's not collectible.
Oftentimes it's not collectible.
All right. That's a decent reason, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Flaxman. Mr. Powell?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. There is no basis for a new trial here since the zero damages verdict is amply supported and consistent with the law of this circuit. Plaintiff's request to change that law is waived. In addition, because plaintiff ultimately recovered just $1 out of the thousands he requested, the denial of costs was proper, too.
Now, on the subject of costs, is it really fair to characterize this case as a mixed result case? I mean, I know that we have cases like Gavone, but it is inherently difficult, as Mr. Flaxman argued, to place a dollar figure in something like the loss.
I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
It's inherently difficult to place a cost on, you know, the loss of liberty. But giving, you know, we're looking at Rule 54 and that very strong presumption in favor of an award of costs to a prevailing party. Why should we penalize someone like Mr. Walker who succeeds in showing that he was deprived of his constitutional rights, and not even to give him costs? That's very bothersome to me.
We believe it's correct, Your Honor, under the Gavone case and also Northbrook Access. Gavone, those are also cases that did not involve a loss on some claims and a victory on others. A true mixed result. I agree that term is somewhat adds some more confusion than it really eliminates. But to say that a court can the district court has discretion under Gavone and Northbrook Access to take into consideration in reviewing a cost petition to reduce or deny costs entirely based on a minimal recovery relative to what was requested is entirely consistent with those, in line with those cases.
Well, I didn't see Mr. Flaxman requesting a specific number. I mean, I remember him saying things like, you know, is what occurred here worth $1 million? No. $500,000? No. You know, he went through this whole litany.
Well, Your Honor,
isn't it worth something to?
Well, Your Honor, the complaint certainly sought a specific amount, at least at least $25,000 in compensatory damages and $10,000, I believe, in punitive damages, in excess of that. So there's a specific figure there. And Gavone does say that the court should look to what was requested in the complaint in assessing this. And at trial, maybe a specific number wasn't suggested, but the trial counsel did say that somewhere in the range of $5,000 to $15,000 might be appropriate. It's not $100,000, but it's probably $5,000 to $15,000. It seems clear that that was more than just an offhand sort of, it wasn't a failure to specify some kind of amount, give a ballpark range to the jury to award damages. Unless there are any questions about the attorney's fees, I will rest on a brief on that issue. Turning first to damages, plaintiff does not present a manifest weight challenge, but we do want to emphasize that the verdict was, in fact, consistent with the evidence. Plaintiff claims he did claim at the time he was detained and later that he was very upset about being detained. But it's undisputed that he was held with others who were at least acquaintances, if not friends, with whom he had social plans for the night. And the group did joke with each other.
So that's where they had their evening.
The district court did put in those terms, I think it may be a little bit of an overstatement, but it's the joking really does show that there, or at least the jury could conclude from that there were no emotional damages. And Mr. Walker did insist that the group was laughing about an ironic comment rather than the situation itself, but the jury wasn't required to credit that version. Now, plaintiff's argument on appeal is that a new trial is warranted because he didn't obtain presumed damages for loss of liberty. But this is waived for two reasons. First, presumed damages could not have been awarded under the very damages instruction plaintiff tendered and the district court gave. That instruction told the jury to consider physical and mental/emotional pain and suffering and no other types of compensatory damages. Nor did plaintiff offer any instruction requiring the jury to award damages for his detention or object when none was given. Second, plaintiff didn't contend below that this court's Joseph decision, to which counsel alluded, should be replaced by the Second Circuit's decision in Kerman. Now, this waiver argument is not inconsistent with Guzman, as plaintiff claims. Guzman did observe in dicta that an unlawful search or seizure will, quote, often produce a compensable claim for loss of time. But it did not so much as mention the language from the damages instruction there that plaintiff compares to the one here, let alone conclude, as plaintiff represents, that language allowed the jury to award damages for loss of time. This is in the reply brief at page 8. The court had no reason to address that issue, since Guzman's challenge was to the decision to give a nominal damages instruction. And this court had already decided to remand for a new trial because of an erroneous liability instruction. Thus, the court was simply offering guidance to the district court should the defendant request a nominal damages instruction on remand. Plaintiff also misstates the waiver argument Guzman rejected. The actual argument was that plaintiff failed to object, or excuse me, to develop on review the point that the liability instruction was prejudicial. It was not, as here, waiver based on anything that was done or not done in the district court, and also, unlike here, had nothing to do with the damages instruction. Waivers aside, plaintiff presents no compelling reason to abandon Joseph for Kerman. In holding that a plaintiff detained for 10 hours was entitled, as a matter of law, to loss of liberty damages, the Kerman majority lost sight of the settled rule that compensatory damages generally are not presumed but must be proved in order to be recovered. And there's no basis for exempting false arrest cases from this rule, since any actual injuries caused by unlawful arrest are not inherently difficult to establish. Kerman also improperly treated as fundamental or plain error the failure to instruct the jury sua sponte on loss of liberty damages. Plain errors are a very sharply limited category of obvious errors affecting the very framework within which a trial proceeds. As the Kerman dissent recognized, omission of a presumed damages instruction isn't remotely in that category. If there are no further questions, we'd ask that this court affirm the district court's judgment in order denying fees and costs.
Thank you, Mr. Powell. Thank you. Mr. Flaxman.
Your Honor's question, I didn't try the case. I'm flattered that you thought I did a good enough job. Mr. Kulis tried the case, and he gets all the credit for being here. And we're not asking for presumed damages. I think the court may remember that that was once the law in the Seventh Circuit, that you could get damages for the violation of your rights. I think there was a trial judge who became an appellate court judge who gave an instruction like that and then got reversed by this court from maybe Judge Flom will remember the name of the case later. But it's, we're not asking for presumed damages.
Is he still here?
Excuse me?
Is the appellate judge still here?
He's sitting to your left.
Yeah.
We're not asking for presumed damages.
I didn't know that, all that stuff. I'm glad to know now where it came from.
We're asking for damages for being locked up for 12 hours. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Flaxman. Case is taken under advisement, and our thanks to all counsel, and the court will stand in recess.